So the title of the talk is Love the World and Change It. And it's really about us and the world, and about us acting in the world from this place and with these qualities and energies we've been talking about. So in a very quick one-word summary, metta is about loving the world. Karuna is about crying with the world. Mudita is about laughing with the world. And upekkha is living existence. Existence, existing in the world. The existent view. So it's grounded on awareness, all of these qualities we're talking about, they all depend on awareness. So we are still talking about a ground of mindful awareness, expanding the consciousness, moving from avidya, not knowing, ignorance in the Dharma language, functioning on automatic, to vidya, wisdom, awakening, awareness, knowing what's happening, fully present. This movement is an empowering movement. Not easy, because we're just swept away by habits, pressures, social mind, forgetfulness, we're swept away. So the movement to awareness is a turning. Joan Macy, whose technique we did yesterday, she calls it the great turning. And the Buddha also had that language, turning to what is rather than pushing away, being in the automatic pilot, avoiding, covering over, turning to. And the Buddha said it's such a power comes from there. He calls it the lion's roar. Shragashala Ariye, the lion's roar, because it's so powerful to come back into awareness, and it's powerful in action. Our actions are totally different if they're from awareness. So that's the ground of really everything we're talking about. But it includes exposing the things that stop our power. It isn't just a sort of feel-good kind of good energy going out. That's part of it, but it's also doing kind of quite a lot of cleaning, seeing, when we're talking about us and the world, seeing the helplessness that we feel, we can't manage, it's all too big. Seeing the voices of judgment, seeing the voices of frustration, of expectation, and then disappointment. Seeing the voices of measuring, it only works for me if I get there, or if I do that. Otherwise, I feel I'm not doing anything. It only works if I can totally change the government. And if I can't, I'm just constantly frustrated. It only works if I can change the climate. Oh, I can't change the climate. So I'll give up and go home and turn on the TV and get depressed. These are negative mind states, so that's part of remembering to be aware, the lion's roar, is part of working with these mind states that disempower us and dissolving them, melting them, knowing them not as truth, but as mind states. They're truth as experiences, they're not truth about the world. So that's part of the lion's roar, to expose it. And that's a lot of our daily diet is stuff like that. It's okay, we do have all the time expectations and thoughts of success and failure, and this is our diet for the day. And it's okay, we're human beings. But still we should know that the lion's roar means constantly seeing those voices that disempower us and dissolving them. And so a lot of the work is about that, and then we find ourselves with power that we didn't realize before. It happens in a way partly by itself. We will find ourselves with new powers because we've undone the blocks and those inner voices that pull the carpet, Moshechet HaShatiach, Mitachat HaRaglaim Shelanu. We see them as not real. They're empty. They're voices. They're habits of mind. Including our vulnerability. Actually, to feel our vulnerability, we're just naked and we're here for a moment in this body and then it goes and this moment passes and is a power. So it becomes a power because it's closer to the truth of things. And we turn it from a problem into a power. I'm here for this moment. I don't know. I can't say what will be, but right this moment, I'm living totally and I'm contributing what I can to the world. That's empowering. And it's the vulnerability that helps us, in a way, get to that place. And as well as what I was said before, apamada is part of the lion's roar. Apamada, this quality of care. Mindfulness is not neutral, it's caring. It has a sense of what it's like to care for things, to care and be careful. One time I was listening to a Cambodian monk and he was giving a talk, and he said, my whole talk is in three words. And the words he said were, guard the gates. Sha'arim, the gates. The gates being the mouth, what goes out, speech, what goes in, food and needs, the gates of the senses, and the gate of the mind. What goes in, what goes out. So mindful awareness, in a way, helps us to guard the gates and to be, in a way, in control. I mean, control is not a good word there, but it's more like a sense of, if we are aware, we can actually take charge of our life more.
Responsible.
Yeah. And one of the aspects of awareness is also a kind of being open to the big picture. I had a few discussions with some of you in the last few days, and this has come up quite a bit in terms of choices in life, how I act in life. And the sense of a big picture, namely karma, to use a kind of Eastern slogan, but it's the big picture, basically, is quite helpful. Because it helps you let go and realize what you can do is throw out seeds in the world, and then the world does what it wants with it. Instead of saying, I must get there, and putting yourself under pressure, you throw the seeds in the world and let the world do what it wants with that. That's the best we can do. We can't do much more than that. And that's enough. The Buddha wasn't able to stop wars. He stopped one or two, he didn't stop others. He couldn't stop his whole people being killed in a massacre. His own people, he couldn't stop it. A neighboring king got angry. So we can trust karma because it helps us really to let go and let life take us. Not passively, actively. We're with the action of life, but we do let life do its thing. And it actually working with that is empowering. Sometimes been in discussion about the butterfly effect, the effect aparpar, which is very much the story of karma. And sometimes it's really helpful to decide on an action in your life, if you feel that. I can do this. And what happens there? I don't know exactly, but it goes out there, this butterfly wings. It goes out. The beautiful thing about karma is it helps us to understand that everything is meaningful. The butterfly effect means everything is meaningful. Everything makes waves, change in the world, and we can feel it. A word that we say, a movement, a look in the eyes, change happens. We don't need to measure it and how many people and how much. If I got into that with my books, I have a hard time measuring how many books, you know, open up Amazon. I'm only the 2,000, 5,000 on the list of bestsellers. Go into bookshops and say, where's my book? It's not here. I'm going to go to talk to the manager. Crazy. But it doesn't matter. If you know, one person can be, their life can be totally changed by something you say or something I write. Is that better? Is that worse? Who's measuring? Only the mind measures, but where is the measurement? There isn't any, because karma is so big that it's a butterfly effect. Everything you do is just interconnected with everything, and it goes out. That's our life. So it really lets us relax. I remember doing this event with the climate change. I don't know if any of you were there in Kikar Habima. Anyone was there? It was 2 years ago. It was October. So a whole group of us wanted to do something for climate change. And they did a lot of work. And really it was us, actually. We did a lot of work. And we got some musicians and we made a bama there. And there were around 1,000 people. And I guided a lying meditation, lying face down, like dying, for 10 minutes. There was 1,000 people in the square. And I was kind of guiding face down, lying down, dying, as a demonstration or as an action in support of climate change. And, you know, it was a beautiful thing to do. And then we stopped. We didn't do anything after that. That was it. I don't know what the result. Maybe yes, maybe no. That's the best we can do. So we are within the conditions. The conditions are big. Karma is the conditions of reality that we face. It's huge. It's beyond us to imagine. If we really ask the question, what makes me angry right now? And if we ask that question, we come up with an answer like politics in Israel. Okay. But what makes that? History of ignorance. What makes that? Well, childhood of the politicians, I don't know, schools. What makes that? What makes that one? And in the end, everything you ask becomes endless. So your anger, where does it go? Against what? The whole universe? So karma really helps us to let go from that. You can say, yeah, I it's him. But that doesn't really... if you look at it with wisdom, it doesn't help. It just makes you angry and makes you part of the problem because your anger is, you know, then you're struggling and fighting and conflict with somebody and so on. And the whole thing is so much bigger. So you contribute without that. You don't need that. You understand the bigness of conditions, causes and conditions, which are a huge network that run, that sort of runs things, and let go. In relation to compassion and action, compassion is really the power in us that gets us out of the comfort zone and says, I'm going now there. The heart that tells us, go there. Why? Karma. I can't say that that is better than that. But that's what is calling me right now. And this compassionate heart is listening to the call, but not trying to weigh it up. What's better? What's not better? What's this? What's that? We cannot do that. What calls us is good enough. I remember having a lot of discussion in Tovana about vegan diet. And some people very passionate about vegan diet. And with passion about changing something, there can be also criticism of those that don't. And it goes, it's part of the game. So I was trying to kind of, in discussion, a bigger view. So those that are not vegan are less than you who is vegan. Well, you that are vegan quite rightly because of the suffering of animals. That's what touches the heart. But the Buddha, who was not a vegan, was not touched by suffering. The Dalai Lama, who is not a vegan, there's something wrong with him. He's not ethical. You cannot go, you can say, my heart is touched by the suffering of animals here. And it is. When I go on my run around the kibbutz here sometimes, and I pass by the refet, the cows, I sometimes have tears in my eyes when I see them. And I feel what their life is like. So I certainly feel for them, but what you do is where your heart is touched in the way it's touched for you. So someone that's going to help suffering of cancer patients but eats meat, no one can say that they shouldn't, that they should be, the animals are more important. You can say, because you can't solve all the problems in the world. You cannot. So what I think compassion is really helpful as a guide. What gets you up in the morning with a compassionate heart is good enough. And let the heart tell you, I'm going there. But what you can do is keep pushing the boundaries of your compassion. Keep, like we talked about before, keep on more, you know, meeting the boundaries, the limits of our heart, and dissolving those limits. Actually, I don't need those limits. I can go further. It's about listening, and it's about letting our heart vibrate with the pain of the world and being empty enough inside that we can allow that compassionate heart to be more including the world more and more. And it's the emptiness inside that will help us. There's more space in the consciousness than in the heart. So that really, compassion is an engine that drives us to get up and go out and make change in the world. And equanimity is the power that keeps us steady and not destroyed by things, and not knocked down by things on the way. It helps us to be less reactive to guvati, to see things arising and passing and be there with things that arise and pass. And it really helps us, equanimity helps us to see everything in terms of relationship and not in terms of me and what I need and what I expect and so on, but to see everything is interconnected. It's the big picture again, equanimity. To be in the big picture, everything is interrelated. We are part of. And that also helps us to be steady and go out in the world. What we give in relationship to others, knowing others, giving work to the world from a place of steady, open awareness. I remember we really practiced equanimity, maybe I mentioned this, about in the peace walks we did with the Israelis and Palestinians. For years and years we did silent walks through towns and Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and we went from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, 8-day walks, and through villages and towns and kibbutzim, and sometimes people shouting at us and sometimes not, and sometimes laughing and hugging us because saying this is the only way that peace can happen, and sometimes we never got anyone being violent with us, and sometimes going to the machsomim and just being having a different energy there. And talking to the soldiers at the machsomim and trying to soften everything, and being equanimous, steady, not against, not fighting, making more fights and more conflict, not to the soldiers, not to anybody. And just sort of a different energy coming from this place. And Be'emet, equanimity is a power, and I said it before. One steady person, when everyone else is going crazy, can make a big difference. Because it's like a spine in a group. And I remember one woman, old woman in one of the classes, said when all her grandchildren come, and all the big family arrives in the kibbutz, it's nightmare, she said. She's the grandmother. But what I do is I take my chair and I sit in the middle of the room quietly and I meditate. And I know that slowly, slowly everything will quieten down. And it's happened to me many times in work with workshops with Palestinians, Israelis, Arabs, Jews, where things get a bit out of control. And hasn't happened so much, but it has happened. And really I do try and do the same thing, which is to sit there quietly and radiate equanimity. And it works somehow, subtly, I don't know how. The energies change because there's some model of another way of being. It's an intuitive model or a subconscious model. There's another way of being, which is just to sit quiet. So there is a constant question that I want to address, which is, how can I really make change if I don't measure or judge the best way? And if I measure or judge, then I know what to do because I know that this works and this doesn't work. So all that is true in a way. It's not that we shouldn't pay attention to what's coming from our actions, but if we are constantly controlled by outcomes that we want, tozo'ot she'anachnu rutzim, or tzipiyot. All the energy is going to measuring, and we miss something very important, which is, what are we giving out? What qualities are we giving into the world? So it's like paying attention to how we do things, not measuring the results. It changes the head a bit. I remember one time I was working with an Arab amuta, Amutat HaGalil in Shvaram, and I was actually employed by them. They were paying me a salary to help them with ecological projects and with medical projects as a professional. And I was helping them make an application to the European Union for money, for a lot of money. And crazy work, which ended up with something like 8 boxes, kartonim, 8 boxes of paperwork that we had to send to them, which was our application. And half of those boxes were about measuring outcomes. Yeah. How we measure what will happen. How we measure if it's working. What's our parameters. And it's like crazy, you know, I can't do this anymore. It's too much. So it can get obsessive. But we can do it ourselves, with ourselves. It's working, it's not working. It's working, it's not working. It's lachti, lo it's lachti. And we're so frightened of failure. We're so scared of failure. But it's only the self that's scared of failure. The world, not so sure what is success and failure. We think we know. We don't even know. A big view of karma, a big view will say, we're a butterfly effect. We give to the world what we can give. We sow seeds all the time. That's all we can do. The measuring is on top of that, giving us a hard time. Okay, we can have a little bit saying, here is better than there. It seems the door is open. And I think there is an understanding. That door is open, that door is closed. That's a wisdom, that's fair enough. But they don't need much more than that in terms of measuring outcomes. It's lachti lo, it's lachti, lachti lo. It takes up space in the consciousness and takes energy away from us. So we give ourselves, the movement in the Dharma of social change is simply dana. We give ourselves to the world because we know that anyway we are the world and the world is us. We give ourselves to the world in a natural way because we are the world. You're helping nature, climate change, whatever, because you are nature. So it's nature helping itself. You take ourselves a little bit out of this picture, it's nature helping itself. Is something better than that to do in life? Is there anything else to do in life? It's nature helping itself. So we kind of don't hold on, and we give our, as dana, we got our life as a gift, and we give it back. And that's can't think of anything better than that to do with our life. So the primary image of this is the Bodhisattva, and it's a beautiful image. It's coming from the Tibetan tradition, but I think it's something that is really a nice image for us too. Bodhi is awareness, and sattva means pure, harmonious, subtle, refined. It's actually a very beautiful Sanskrit word, sattva. It's been a very powerful word in my own life. It's been a real word up there that's been leading a lot of things in my life, sattva. From the time of India in 1976, when I was first there, I was really struck by this word, what it, the implication of this word, sattva. Purity, harmony, subtlety, non-violence, peacefulness, wisdom, all in one word, which applies to your actions, what you eat, what you think, the consciousness, everything, sattva. So body sattva. And what's interesting about the bodhisattva as an image is that it includes an intention, which is, in the Tibetan tradition, is the bodhisattva vow, the promise or the intention that I will keep going, helping all beings to awaken, helping the world. That's my commitment, and I will do it instead of some personal liberation. But of course the bodhisattva is, the bodhisattva movement is also liberation. And it's liberation in the non-personal sense, through compassion, through qualities which we send out into the world. So the intention gives an energy, and I think that intention is good for us to know. Intention, it's not that we don't have intention. Because we're Buddhist, we're just quiet, we don't need intention. We do need intention. The compassionate heart is an intention. To help the cows of Indore is an intention. We are touched by something and there's an intention. The second of the Eightfold Path is intention, hit kavnut. So that of course we have intention. So the bodhisattva is a very strong intention to help all beings to awaken, to reduce suffering in the world. And how does the bodhisattva do it? Not through measuring, but through qualities. Developing qualities, paramis, skill, manifesting qualities in the world. That's what we can do. We actually can't do anything else. All the measuring will stop us. What we can do is say, quality of equanimity, I will send it out into the world. Quality of love, I will send it out into the world. Quality of caring, of calm, of dana, giving, equanimity. They're the engines. That's what I'll give to the world. That's what all I can give to the world. Can't give anything else. There isn't anything else that you can give, actually. So the nice thing about understanding about the bodhisattva is it's very, very developed in the Tibetan tradition. And one nice thing about the bodhisattva, the actions of the bodhisattva, is, and it's to do with us, is that actions that are based on less of a self, meaning more empty space, if you like, less me and mine, coming out into the world become skillful actions. And so the bodhisattva's actions in the world are called upaya, meaning skill. And it's a word you might have heard in the Dharma word, and it's actually a very, very nice understanding. Upaya, or skill, is the way that our actions in the world become developed and skillful because they're based on less me and mine. How does emptiness act in the world? Upaya, skillfully. In other words, because you are less you, me and mine, you'll know what to do. Why? Because you'll see what's needed. You'll see what's needed because you're listening to what's needed. You're listening to what's needed because you're not full of your own stuff. What I need. You're able to listen to what the world needs. And from there, skillful action comes out. The right. I couldn't teach. I'm sure Asaf, I'm sure all of us, we couldn't teach from a place that is not skillful, has no upaya. Upaya is fundamental. It's what allows teaching. This moment is teaching. Next moment, I'm playing with my grandchildren, whatever. My chickens, also upaya. It's kind of more spacious inner life, manifest in the world, becomes skillfulness. And more selfing can become unskillfulness. We want to help, but only if. It's me come first. So it's a very nice image to have at the back of the mind, the bodhisattva image. There's a text about that which really goes all the way. It's quite a nice text. If the bodhisattva has managed to awaken all beings, every ant and insect and bird and dog and cat and human being is totally enlightened. So if you ask him or her, who did it? Then the answer is, I don't know. And if you ask him or her, how did you do such a thing? I don't know. it's our answer in a way. With less selfing, you can say that. How did it happen? I don't know. That's what happened. You go out in the world and, you know, do an amazing thing. How did it happen? Not sure. It just happened. Because its qualities are not self that's doing it. So it's a reminder that instead of measuring, instead of driven by outcomes, what we want to happen, offering ourselves to the world as dana, let the compassionate heart drive this, the engine that drives us and says go there, and non-measuring that says what you give is what is possible. And the world will look after the results. Like Mother Teresa says, you can't necessarily do big things, but you can do little things with a big heart. And who is saying which is better? The measuring mind will say this or not this, but if we let go of that measuring mind, who's to say? So that's what I want to say for the moment. Let's have just a minute of quiet. Just a minute.